day 16 is all about not being scared to have the long-term care conversation. Alejandra says, I'm grateful for leftovers. Yes, girl. For sure. I'm grateful for grocery stores that we have the ability to just shop as needed and order when needed, et cetera, because we live in America, at least for now, right? So day 16 is a conversation that most people don't want to have, but we have to have this conversation. And the truth is, can we all admit we're going to get older? Like, we're not going to be living like we're in the, what's that movie I'm thinking of? Twilight, where we're like 187 years old or whatnot. Definitely not going to happen for us, but we're going to get older. And that's one thing that we know. And so the main point in day 16, right, about not being scared to have these conversations is that millions of U.S. households contain someone caring for an older relative or friend. Okay? Don't we all wish we could just be in the Twilight movie and look like Victoria and Edward, or like Jacob with his werewolf self? You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't mind being Team Jacob, if you know what I mean. But we're not, okay? So we have to think about the aging conversation, okay? And I'll be honest, like, today was just another reminder for me to make sure that I'm having the right conversations with my mom. And we've been having some about insurance and some different things. But the truth is that millions of U.S. households contain somebody that's going to care for an older relative or friend. And so let's pledge, okay? Bella, okay? Team Bella. So my pledge is I will take some time to learn about long-term care insurance and begin planning for any caregiving responsibilities that may fall on me. So, man, can we all agree? excuse me. Can we all agree that she started out day 16 with such a sweet but sad story? Yeah. And so Michelle starts off day 16 talking about her father-in-law, who her and her husband had, you know, the opportunity to care for him. And he was angry a lot of the time. He couldn't feed himself. He couldn't bathe. Just the smallest things. He just was not independent. And he was actually really sick from lung cancer. And she goes on to tell the story, like, he just had a really hard time. He was always angry and he was in a lot of pain. So, like, can we agree that we can kind of see how someone like that could be angry, because he was always in pain. He was not able to do like essential things that we take for granted, right? Like, think about us in our youth right now. We don't go work out because we're tired. We don't go work out because the dog ate the left shoe that you're supposed to wear to the gym. We don't go work out because you are intimidated by the people at the gym, or you're saying that your fingers are broken and you can't press play on YouTube. I don't know what your excuse is, but I think about, like, this made me think about her father-in-law, because he was in a bed so restricted. Hey, Berenice, what's up, sis? He was in a bed so restricted that he couldn't even do like basic essentials and tasks for himself. And so I can see why he was angry a lot of the time, right? You go from being mobile to not. You go from being able to bathe yourself to not. And so that's why I really, really, really encourage people to always make sure that they're keeping a gratitude journal. And I had to learn to do the same, because some of the essential, like, critical day-to-day things that we do with our bodies, with our mind, with our vision, we take for granted. And then you have this story that she opens up with about, man, he couldn't even bathe himself. So I want you to think about that. You know, have you been taking your mobility for granted? Have you been complaining about, man, I really don't want to exercise? It's okay to say that, but still go get to the exercise. Because at the end of the day, that's something that we have the privilege to be able to still do. Can we agree? And so someone like him who's restricted to the bed is kind of like, dang, I could see why he was angry. And so in turn, Michelle was having a really hard time caring for him. She got depressed. She was angry because she's like, man, I'm trying to keep the strength to stay here, to endure, to help take care of him. And so she ended up getting counsel from a minister, a pastor, and his wife, and she found a way to break through that darkness that he was experiencing. And it was really just to meet him with joy, no matter how he felt, no matter how angry he was. And the whole family started to do it. And guess what? She says it started to work over time. You ever meet somebody, you guys, that just has a mean face on, they don't want to say good morning. And then when you're overly kind to them, they kind of like crack a little bit of a smile, or, you know, they chuckle a little bit and you're like, man, dang. Alejandra says, I had to relearn how to walk again. So I'm grateful for mobility. Sis, that's what I'm talking about. That is what I'm talking about. I kind of felt like that, not like that, obviously, because that's hard to go from walking to having to relearn that. But when I couldn't see through this eye, it was like half of the world turns off, because you go from being able to see from both sides. And so it gives you a different perspective when you go through things like that or know someone who has. And so it really, like, this story reminded me of how, like, that overly joyous spirit and kindness can really become infectious. And so the family as a whole focused on doing that. And over time, he would still complain a little bit, but he began to tell jokes and laugh. And if you guys know, laughter is good for the soul, okay? Humor is part of just who I am. I might not be that funny to people, but I have like a corny sense of humor, I think. So I can get you to laugh about something at least. But anyway, some people beg to differ. Johnny's probably going to listen to this call like, she's a little funny, but not really that funny. Because, you know, everybody has a different kind of sense of humor. And mine is like dry, kind of corny sometimes, school age humor. But anyway, so their kindness became infectious. And I want you to think about this in your own life, about how you're treating people, how you're treating elderly people that might seem to be grumpy or whatever the case is. Your kindness can become infectious. Now, I'm not saying let people mistreat you just because. But I want you to know that that is infectious, and someone may not notice it right away, or they may not appreciate it right away. But I once read something, and dang, I'm trying to remember where I read this at, but you cannot allow the way other people treat you or the way other people see you to alter your character and who you know you are. And for me, I'm like the person that wants to make sure people feel like they belong, right? That's why you guys see me. I adopt people from other teams all the time. We hang out at the events together because I'm just that person. And I would like to think that that's infectious, where people feel welcomed and maybe they return the favor for someone else when the occasion may come up. And so just know that is infectious. So then she goes on and saying like, man, his spirit got better, but little by little, he, like, his body was just failing. And so then she goes into talking about how he transitioned into hospice in their home. And if you don't know anything about like hospice care, it's basically just keeping them comfortable until God decides it's their time, right? So he was in hospice and she had to take a business trip. And at first she didn't want to go, but she didn't know when the end would be. Obviously, a lot of people don't know. Like, when someone's in hospice, it's just kind of like you're waiting it out, which is really hard. So she talks about how she took the trip and then came back. And so, hey, Shelly, what's up? I see you, Elizabeth. And so it was a one-day trip, and she was really praying, like, God, just get me back home before he closes his eyes for the last time. And so she went on the trip. She came back. As soon as she got home, she dropped the bags at the door and ran to where he was at, right? And this story was just like, I felt like I was like in her house with her as she dropped the bag down at the door, got to his room. And he just, like, when she got there, he heard and he felt her, obviously. And he opened his eyes and was staring at her. Excuse me. And so the nursing assistant ended up hurrying up to get Michelle's husband, which was his That was his dad. And together, they all stood by his side, and he was just breathing real slow. And he had already let them know, like, I don't want any extreme measures to keep me alive. And so she just whispered to him, like, hey, it's okay for you to go. And he did. And honestly, I'm a softie, y'all. The first time I ever did the fast and I read that, I cried because I'm like that kind of person. I joke around and I play all day. Y'all already know. But I'm also a crier, okay? In case nobody knows. You know now. So the first time I did the fast, I cried because I literally felt like I was, I guess, like, just feeling her story. You ever hear a story and like you feel it in your core? And I was just like, man. So then the rest of the chapter, right, of day 16 was just that much more impactful to me. Like, it really got me thinking about some things that I really need to sit and have some serious conversations about. Like, Johnny may not agree, but when I die, I want pink glitter in my casket. Or like, I wanted it in my ashes, but he said he won't cremate me. So I just want it. So like, if you guys are here as my accountability partners, I need you guys to make sure that Johnny sprinkles hot pink, but it has to be like hot pink glitter. It can't be like powder pink. It has to be like fuchsia glitter. Okay. And so I'm going to make sure that I appoint that in my legal paperwork. Okay. You got to make sure it's hot pink. But it really does, like, all jokes aside now, it really got me thinking of just like certain conversations that have to happen. And, you know, with my experience in banking, we're going to talk about some of the things that happens when you don't have that kind of stuff in place. And it was funny because at like 22, 23, my best friend is actually a manager in the banking world. And she's the one who kind of planted that seed for me. And at a young age, I was thinking about having a will and like what I want people to do with my stuff when I die. And a lot of people don't want to talk about it. Like, girl, don't talk like that. You're not dying yet. How do you know? Every single day we walk out of our house is a 50-50 chance that we don't come back. And that's just keeping it real. That's not to live in fear, but that's the reality. Everything we do has risk associated with it. Everything. I could literally go take a shower and I'm going to knock on wood. I'm not really a suspicious kind of person, but I'm just going to knock anyway because that's kind of what you did growing up. I don't know. I need to unlearn that, but I'm going to knock on the wood. So like someone could go take a shower, slip, fall, hit their head, and then it's over. And so everything that we do has risk tied to it. Obviously, certain situations are way more risky than others. Right? Like a drunk driver, you have that much more risk of killing yourself or someone else than someone who's driving sober home from work. You know what I mean? But there's still risk with everything. That's why it's crazy to me when people are like, investing, no, I'm not trying to take no risk. Bro, you took a risk this morning when you drove to work. Congratulations. We all take risk. And so this story, like, it really touched my heart because I was like, man, she really said, like, I believe he waited for me. And the heartbreaking thing is that a lot of people will experience having to become a caregiver of some kind. And the more sad thing is I feel like the day that we live in today, we don't talk about this enough. We don't talk about preparation enough. And then you see people like these GoFundMes and all these things that with some kind of preparation, they could have really mitigated some of that damage. Because can we be real? The one guarantee we know is we're all going to die. We just don't know when. We know we have an expiration date. And the scary statistics about caregivers is that 65 million people, y'all, who give their time and money every year to care for sick or disabled relatives. And most of those people are elderly, the ones that they're caring for. And so their father-in-law, like Michelle's father-in-law, they were in a little bit of a better position because he was a saver. He had some resources. But the truth is, a lot of people have to take time off from work. A lot of people risk their jobs. They tap into the little bit of financial resources that they do have. And they're doing this to care for one parent, both parents, or an elderly relative. And so these are, a lot of these facts are taken from Alliance, AARP, and National Family Caregivers Association. And I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about AARP because I actually work for the company who owns AARP. So I'll talk to you guys about a resource that I want to show you. But the truth is this. The value of the services provided annually by unpaid family caregivers is an estimated $450 billion with a B. So these numbers are pretty alarming, especially when we know that most families are not financially prepared to care for an elderly relative. And so let's talk about who typically inherits the responsibility of being a caregiver. 66% of family caregivers are women. And it somewhat makes sense given our nurturing nature, but 66% of family caregivers are women. And more than 37% have children or grandchildren younger than 18 living with them as they're taking on this responsibility. Someone in the chat, it just says Facebook user, but I helped take care of my grandma last year. She passed away this year, but before she passed, she heard my tia's and mom's voice. It felt like she waited for them. Yes, that is, I'm sorry for your loss, first of all. And second, it's just, life is so fragile that sometimes you think like, man, what am I doing with my time? Like this chapter, like this day is way deeper than just the surface level. Let's take care of our old people. Like it's so much deeper than that because it really makes you question like, dang, what am I doing with my time here? Am I getting my family financially prepared? Am I doing some of the things that I know I'm called to do? Like this goes so deep, so deep. And so family caregivers spend an average of 20 hours a week providing care. Okay, that's considering someone works a 40-hour work week in a traditional schedule. 20 hours caring for someone is a lot of time. But then you have 13% that provide 40 hours of care a week or more. And that's literally a full-time job. Literally a full-time job. So for someone like her father-in-law, he needed around-the-clock care, bathing, all the things. And so the truth is that there were gaps that had to be filled in by her and her husband because even with them having two aides that would come care for him, there were still things that needed to get done when those two aides were not there. And so her and her husband still had to fill in the gap. So think about somebody who doesn't have an aide that's going to come help. And the crazy thing is that 70% of caregivers who work say that they have difficulties on their jobs because of their roles as caregivers. It's a lot. And then think about someone having to try to work full time at the same time. That's a lot. So when we think about, man, that's a lot. Like there's really nothing else to really say outside of, man, that's a lot. So when you think about the big picture of elderly care, it's like, man, there is some joy in caregiving, knowing that that you have their back, but it's a lot of responsibility. And you know, she gives an amazing resource in here for anyone who is already a caregiver. There's a website. There's tons of resources she gave you. But 12 million older Americans are going to need long-term care by 2020. We're in 2022 now. But we're seeing it more and more that the elderly are needing more care. And so her question is, are you preparing yourself for what it will take to take care of your parent or elderly relative? And just by the show of... you can type in the chat me, or you can just drop a 7. How many of us would be ready right now if we had to take care of our elderly relative or parent or parents? I can tell you that I'm not where I want to be financially to like fully take care of my mom 24/7. Would I do it? Hell yeah, I'd rise to the occasion. But there's preparation that can happen in between her ever needing something like that. And so this is really an eye opener, and it gives you a deeper sense of your why. So remember when we were talking about just, you know, why are you really doing this? Why do you really want financial peace? Why do you want financial freedom? This day right here really just snapped me back into a deeper sense of my why. Because I look at my mom and I'm like, bro, I would do it. Hands down, no questions asked. I wouldn't even blink three times. But would I be able to sit here and confidently say that I'm pretty prepared? No, I can get ready, but come on, y'all. If we stay ready, we don't got to get ready, right? So this really made me open my eyes to, dang, I really got to step it up. I got to really get out here and not play with my time. Because again, everything that we do is a risk. And so you think about someone like Michelle's father-in-law who couldn't even bathe himself. And I'm like, what am I doing with my time on earth? Like, not from a negative talk down about yourself perspective, but it really makes you think like, dang, my why, yes, is my daughter. It's my family, hands down. But I look at my mom and I'm like, dude, no, I refuse to let you have less than normal care or whatever you need because I'm over here playing around with my time. Like, I don't really want to know what I do want to do in my life. So for those of us who at the beginning of the financial fast really talked about what does financial peace look like for you? What does financial freedom look like to you? If you have an existing parent or relative that we know is going to get old, can I keep it real? We cannot be counting on this government for nothing. Though many people want to, we can't. Because guess what? When you have more resources, you can advocate more. And I know that just from our journey with the Mara speech therapy. When you gather up more resources, when you come to the table in better positions, you can advocate way more than if you're depending on the government to provide some kind of elderly care. And now you just have to take whatever they're saying they're going to give you. So we have to really think, man, are you prepared or preparing yourself for what it will look like to take care of your parent or whatever elderly relative we're talking about? And so let's talk about something that Michelle proposes in day 16, which is long-term care insurance. And this one is kind of tricky, not tricky, but it can be really expensive depending on the type of coverage that you're looking for. And most people, like I said, a lot of people are depending on the government to come in and save the day. And it's like Medicare generally is not going to cover long-term care. And long-term care is what actually is going to assist people with daily living activities like dressing themselves, bathing, using the bathroom, like all the things that Michelle's father-in-law had issues with. Medicaid wouldn't have covered it. And Medicare helps pay for medically necessary skilled nursing or home health care, but only if you meet certain conditions. This is just like people that have Section 8, right? Or housing, where they tell you, you can't make over a certain amount of money. If not, we'll take your voucher. I feel like it's the same way with this sick care system that we operate in, because it's not a healthcare system. It's a sick care system. And truth be told, they're really limiting that to people who have low incomes and limited assets. It's the name of the game. It's the name of keep the people in poverty deeper in poverty. Keep them having to freaking fill out GoFundMe accounts. Keep them having to do all that, because the way our system is set up is not set up for them to win. It's set up for them to stay in a box and then die and then have nothing to leave or nothing to go with to even plan their leaving. And that's just the sad truth about our system. It's a system. And if we know this, it is our duty to start going to research things like long-term care insurance. I'm sorry, I gotta take a sip of water, y'all. It's our duty to go look up some of these kind of insurances and see, hey, you know, what is long-term care insurance? You know, how much would that cost? Can I reach out to someone for a free quote just to see where I'm at with it? But sometimes we just don't even want to do the freaking work. We're like, oh, they're perfectly healthy. They're perfectly healthy. Nothing to worry about right now. Again, we take risk every day and things can change like this. So you have to be mindful when you're really thinking about, man, do I have an elderly relative that if something were to happen, and I'll just be real with you guys. I know in my family, and this is just full transparency, heaven forbid, whenever it's my mom's time or something might happen to her, I can pretty much tell you right off the bat that the financial burden would fall on me and my oldest sister, who has a bigger family than me, a whole lot going on too. And so it becomes like that's still not reason to not help her get prepared. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense? Drop a 777 if that makes sense. Like, that's still not a reason to not get prepared. But me knowing that in my family dynamic, that even if I didn't want the financial burden, I would take it hands down. But if I know that, I have to prepare. I can't just expect to insert a whole entire new person, even though she's my mom, but right now she operates independently. But if everything were to fall onto our family, we would have to rearrange everything that we know how to do to make sure that she gets the coverage that she needs. And so it just really makes you think like, man, it's so much deeper than just, and it wasn't until I got into a wealth community that I really understood what it looks and sounds like to set up generations. Right? It wasn't until I got into a wealth community that they had you thinking of someone outside of yourself. And that's why most people don't achieve whatever level of financial success they're working for or whatever they're working for, because you're so consumed with self, you don't even realize that there's so much more outside of just what you're going to do. Especially for those of us who have children, for those of us who still have living parents, whatever the case is, there's so much more to it. So she goes into saying like, you know, long-term care insurance can cover the cost of things like nursing homes, assisted living places. And in most cases, they'll cover expenses for those who need assistance with daily activities like eating themselves, dressing themselves, bathing, or maybe they have like severe Alzheimer's. There's so many different things and it's a really complex thing. So her biggest thing is this insurance is not cheap, right? And it can vary for anywhere from $1,000 to $8,000 a year. And while that doesn't sound like a lot, let's pick a number kind of in the middle. Let's say it's going to cost you $5,000 a year. That's still $417 a month, roughly. Most people can't even save $500 a month right now, let alone pay for long-term care insurance and still be doing their day-to-day. And so it comes down to better preparation. The sooner you start looking for these resources, the better off you're going to be, like with anything else, right? Same thing with whole life insurance or term. The sooner you start looking for your coverage, the lower your premiums will be. And so she goes into giving you some more resources about some consumer resources through NAIC. And there's a shopper's guide to long-term care insurance. So feel free to go check that out. But the truth is, you also have to be careful with some of these policies, because some of these policies are only going to cover nursing home care. And my mom has made it very clear to me, because we talk about this now, and we started really talking about it the first time we did the fast in 2020. And she's like, I don't want to go to nobody's nursing home. Don't put me in a nursing home where they're going to mistreat me. That's what my mom is, a Puerto Rican from the Bronx, New York. She does. She's like, don't put me nowhere. Just have a little basement room for me or something. And so I know she doesn't want to go to a nursing facility or whatever. But though, these are things that you have to start having conversations about. So some policies are only going to cover certain things. And this is why you have to get someone who's qualified enough to help you through this process. And the sooner you start, the lower the premium. So it's just something to get you thinking. And she goes into, man, you got to talk to your parents, right? Or to whatever elderly living relative that is alive that will need your assistance. And a lot of people don't want to talk about this, because I remember growing up, like, they'll be like, "Ay, mija, I'm not dying no time soon. We don't need to even talk about that right now." And the truth is, we don't really know when our time is. And it's not an easy conversation, but can we be real about conversations in general? The harder the conversation, the deeper meaning it has, right? The better of an outcome you can try to work for. But surface level conversations aren't going to really get you to the ultimate result that you probably need to get to. So it's not going to be an easy conversation like any other hard conversation, but having it is so critical. And her grandmother, Big Mama, okay, Big Mama, we've been talking about Big Mama for 16 days now. Big Mama used to tell her, "My business ain't none of your business, girl." I was like reciting Big Mama's voice in my head. I don't really know what she sounds like, but I was in my head like, "Girl, my business ain't none of your business, child. You better stay in the child's place," right? How many of us have heard that growing up? Stay in the kid's place. Mind your business. So, but the truth is that anytime that she would try to talk to Big Mama about her money, about her plans, she would tell her, "You'll know everything you need to know when I die." And sadly enough, most people die and no one ever still knows their plan. And so Big Mama died at 82 and never needed long-term care. But if she had needed it, it would have been a really tough battle. Nobody knew what she wanted. And at least I know my mom doesn't want to go into no nursing place, right? So I would be a terrible daughter if I shoved her in a nursing place knowing that she said she never wanted to go there, as opposed to maybe getting her, like, you know, her own little side apartment, like down the street from me, or built her a little guest house or something like that where a nurse could come help. But it would suck that because of financial resources, you can't do what they would ultimately want, right? And granted, you're the caregiver, so you also have to assess how much you can take on. And so these are just real conversations that you need to be having. And a lot of potential caregivers don't even make the effort to talk to their elderly parent or relative until there's a crisis. And the issue with that is the issue with anything else. That's like when you wait until you have high blood pressure to go do something about your health, or when you wait till you already have diabetes to try to change your eating. Not saying that you still shouldn't, but a lot of times we wait until our backs are against the wall to actually go do something about it. And so it's the same thing here. You wait for a health crisis. Who knows that whatever crisis they're having, are they going to be able to communicate with you properly after? Like, you just never know any of these things. And she talked about a study conducted by Harris Interactive, Inc. They found that 46% of adults surveyed said that they had not taken any action to plan for care or companionship for an elderly relative, even though they estimated the person would need care within a 5-year period. So that means that someone got surveyed and their elderly relative or parent was like 65 maybe, or 70. And knowing that probably by 75 or 80, they would need some care, they hadn't even started having a conversation, thinking about what that looks like. And the whole reason we're even doing this financial fast is to make sure that you are facing your financial issues. A lot of us that have talked one-on-one, I call it face your finances. You have to, Because if you're not in a place where you know what you're working with, how can you possibly aim for increase? You can't. You can't increase anything you don't track, anything you're not aware of. And so a lot of times we're taught to kind of like hide behind a money conversation, right? Like, oh, all poor people just hide. And then the money's still like, hey, girl. Hey, girl. 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 You're taught to hide from one of the most important conversations ever. So the point of doing this entire financial fast is, man, you've got to face your financial issues. Along with that is long-term care. And maybe it doesn't apply to you if you don't have a relative or a friend or a spouse or whoever in your life that would require that. But you yourself will get old. So this is still a conversation to get you thinking as you age. And Michelle says, man, I know what you might be thinking. You might be thinking, what can I do if my parent doesn't even want to talk to me? She says something really simple. Just don't stop trying. They may not crack and tell you right now, but if you make it more about just wanting to help them and not so much about wanting to control them or wanting to control where their money goes and what they're doing, and just make it really about them. Like, you know, I want to make sure that as you age, that we do the things that you want to do, not what we want to do for you or what we want to force you to do because of a lack of resources. So then she goes into finding out if they have a living will or a medical power of attorney. You guys, this is so important. It is so important to have a medical power of attorney. It is important just to have directives, advanced directives. And if you don't know what those are, I'm going to share a couple of resources with you in just a moment. But it is really important that you start to put some of these things into place, especially if you have a parent or a relative that's really, really starting to age out. Like they're getting older. So you want to make sure that you're having these conversations so that you can address, like, maybe they don't even know what some of these things are. Like, maybe they don't know that they have the ability to create a will that tells people what they want. Maybe they don't know. Maybe you're going to be the conduit, the catalyst, right? The change for them to really understand that they can decide. So there's a lot of different things. I mean, durable powers of attorney, guidance on making a medical decision for a loved one that might be on life support. I mean, the really serious conversations that maybe you would not ever want to consider, but you have to address them. Because if you don't, then how will you ever know, right? You have, I mean, there's advanced directives for people who don't want to be resuscitated. If they flatline, they don't want to be intubated and all this stuff. That's just not what they want. And as hard as it may be, as people that care about people in your family, especially a relative or a parent, if they don't want that, you would not want to go against their wishes and give them intubation and all this stuff if that's not what they want. And so it's a heavy conversation, don't get me wrong. But there's so much help out there for you to begin having these conversations. And again, this was an eye-opening day for me that it's like, man, the next time that my mom comes visit, it's kind of like, okay, last time we talked about your life insurance, we got that. Everything squared away with that. You got enough coverage for everything you said you wanted. What does your will look like? Have you redone it? I know my mom has a will, but I don't think she's redone it in a long time. And things change. That's the other thing. If they have already a will in place, getting them to revisit it. Because things change. They might have had a different spouse at the time that that will was created. And guess what? If it doesn't get updated, whatever that will says is what will happen with their money. It's what will happen with any of their assets. And so you want to revisit these conversations. So there's a lot. I will say that also if they're a veteran, there's so many additional resources for them. She gives a whole bunch. So I'm not going to go too into that. I don't know a lot about the benefits for veterans, but she gives some really good sites that you guys can go to and check them out. But she says, explore all living, possible living options. One thing that she did say was she wished that she would have created a bedroom on the first, like on the main floor of their home, because her father-in-law had to be in like the basement room. And so he had to stay down there a lot of the time because he couldn't like climb stairs and stuff like that. So that's one thing that I know for my mom is making sure there's a like one story, like one level. She, her goal is if she moves back to Indiana, which we're working on, might take her a little bit of time, but to get her something that's one story, that's it. That way, as she does age and owns that property, we can add any accommodating things that she might need, a ramp, or like if you've ever been to my house, we live in an older house, but whoever lived here before us, they had someone who had to get some of those accommodations. Because if you're ever in our bathroom, you can see like we have that a little metal, like the metal handle that's attached to the wall for them to like to hold on to. And so just little things, right? We have a ramp in the front of our house. There's a back door, there's a front door, like different things that when you live on one story, it's easier to accommodate than a three-story home, right? And that's why you see a lot of people that as they get older, they downsize homes, not because they can't afford their house anymore. Sometimes that's the case, but a lot of times it's because they need reasonable accommodation that the home they currently live in doesn't, like, it's harder to accommodate. Because think about it, a house that might be two or three stories where the bathroom might be on the second floor, now you have to think about trying to get one of those electric chairs that kind of go up, or you have to think about building a bathroom, which is typically more expensive because of plumbing, right, and electricity, and making sure those things connect. And figuring out, do we even have a spot on the first floor where we can knock something down to put a bathroom? And so when you start to really think about these conversations as your elderly relatives or families getting old, especially if they have serious health issues, this is where we got to be real as a body of people. Can we agree to not ignore stuff that's really obvious? If someone has had heart attacks or they're really sick, they got an oxygen tank, like things that are, you don't want to believe that they'll be gone anytime soon, but their risk, remember risk, their risk is higher that something can happen to them sooner. And so these are conversations that even though they're not the ones we want to have, this is very eye-opening to have them. And why? Because I can tell you that the system we operate in is not going to care more about their care than you. I can tell you that hands down. That's not how our system was created, sadly. And so these are things that you can get the opportunity to think about now. Doesn't mean you have to like fire off and start doing everything right now, but maybe, you know, set up some time to have the conversation just to start it, right? Set up some time to, you know, have a private, you know, let's go to lunch. Let's just talk about life. You know, we're getting older and I'm grateful that you're here, and just start to ask some of those questions. Like, I know it's not something that people talk about a lot, but it's been on my mind, right? And tell them, I read this book and it was really just about making sure that your family is set up for the things that they want. And it just had me really thinking, because it said, think about your parent, like just be transparent with them and tell them your real intention. Like, I really would just want to help you. And I wouldn't want anyone to take advantage of you. And that's the next thing that I want to get into. Oh, they do give a really good resource on page 201 about the geriatric nurses and how you can pay for an hour of their time or a couple of hours. And they can actually help you with the planning process. But this is what I mean by, this is why we got to up our resources. This is why we have to fight for that financial freedom and that financial peace. Because then when you have more of that, you can go Google and look up a geriatric nurse in the city and state where your parent or elderly relative might live, and then say, hey, mom, I'm just telling you this because this is partly my truth. If my mom decides to stay in New York City, and I do have some help because my oldest sister has worked in healthcare for like ever. But it's one of those things where when you have more resources, you can say, hey, mom, you know, I was the stuff we were talking about, just making sure that you got things in order for whenever God decides it's your time. I doubt it's anytime soon, girl, but we just want to make sure, right? So there's this geriatric nurse that can come over and go through like a list of things that we should have in order and how it all works, because I don't even understand some of this. So I'm sure you probably don't even really know all this either. We can kind of learn together, because I'm going to get old one day too, right? It's really from a place of caring about them, for real, for real. And so if you make it just about them and them being helped and their well-being, a geriatric nurse can step in and help you plan the process, but that you need resources for that, aka money. And so they can offer help with legal things, medical things, referrals to other people that might need to be involved in the process, financial. And I want to talk about the financial piece because, and she says the cost for them can range anywhere from $80 to $200 an hour. But let me ask you this, would $200 for an hour to set up your parent for elderly care and to establish the things that they actually want, is that worth it to you? And to me, I say hands down, hell yeah. Everyone might not feel the same, but that's just my relationship with my mom. And I can admit, I don't know a lot of these things. I know some of these things because I work for the company that owns AARP, but it's still not a topic that I'm fluent in, right? And so I want to make sure that she is going to have the care that she wants and that she's going to need. And so let's talk about this financial piece, because financial abuse is actually a real thing amongst the elderly community. And when I worked in banking, y'all, this is probably what pissed me off more than anything that I had seen in my banking days. Probably the hands down, the most heartbreaking thing you could watch people go through. I'll give you an example. So relatives, a lot of times, when a family member, an elderly family member becomes sick or they're become immobile, their own family members, and it could be for a lot of different reasons. A niece or nephew or a grandkid might be on drugs. They might just be evil and ill-willed, period. But they will come and they'll take advantage of that senior. They will start using the checkbook. They will start going to buy things with the person's checkbook, because a lot of elderly people, sometimes they sign their checks and they just have their checkbook so that if they ever need to write a check, they don't have to sign it again. I mean, a lot of little things that you would never think of that would be happening. Or how about the family member that has a lot of influence over the elderly family member who convinces them, hey, Grams, isn't it a good idea for you to go ahead and just put me on the account? That way, if you need anything, I can run to the bank for you. And they make it sound like this big convenience thing. Oh my God, I'm going to be like your personal financial advisor. And then what they do is they start to drain the person's account. Because once that elderly person gives permission to put that person on the account, they can come and withdraw like it's their checking account. They can come and withdraw like it's their savings account if they put them on the savings account. And that is the most heartbreaking thing because, yeah, we can take legal measures, but it's a long process. And by then, they're left with like nothing a lot of times. And financial fraud is such a growing problem in the elderly community because they can't defend themselves. Sometimes they're immobile. Sometimes they start to even lose their mind, right? Things like Alzheimer's, dementia. And you just see these family members that are just taking advantage of them. And they're victimized. They really are. And so it's heartbreaking to think about, but it's a real thing. And so this is why you, as a person that might have an elderly relative or an elderly family member that you can have these conversations with, it's your job to try to help mitigate. Because I've even seen situations where an elderly person needed some work done at their home, but it could have been something minor. And then they hired a company that their nephew told them about And the guy comes out and is like, ma'am, it's actually going to cost $7,000. It could actually be for something that's like $1,000. And then the elderly person writes them a check for $7,000, thinking that they're doing the right thing. Sometimes they don't even remember that they wrote a check. Sometimes they don't even know better. So they think, oh my gosh, if my house has got something and it's $7,000, I'm just going to write you the check. Financial abuse is a real thing. And so for you as a person that can say, you know what? What do these power of attorneys look like? How can we help protect your finances too when we get to that part of the conversation? There's so much that goes into it, but caregiver theft happens all the time. So even sometimes when you have a caregiver that comes to take care of them or to take them to their appointments, I've seen that too at the bank, where the caregiver is stealing money from them. And because they deal with things like Alzheimer's, dementia, they won't even realize that they withdrew cash from the bank. The caregiver steals it, and then they'll go withdraw more cash because they just think they misplaced it or they lost it or don't remember at all. And so it's a really serious thing that, and then you have scams from strangers. Which scams from strangers suck, but I think that it's even more hurtful when it's their own family or their own caregivers taking advantage of them like that. And a lot of them don't even really know better. And it's because a lot of these conversations don't happen. They don't have any family that cares about them enough to see what it looks like to establish themselves as they age. And so it's not an easy conversation to have, you guys, but it is one that you cannot afford to not have. And just keep trying to have the conversation. Just keep trying to plant the seed about how important caregiving is. And ultimately, it's just to take care of them, because the world will not. The caregivers who are out here who really shouldn't even be caregivers are not. They're not. And so I hope that that was helpful and brought you some insight. I'm going to share my screen really quick just to give you guys a couple of resources that I think could be helpful if you're considering this conversation. So let me know when you're able to see my screen. And again, I will post these. I'll post these links in our group literally right now so I don't forget. So let me go through and make a post really quick while we're on this live. And I do the hashtags again, you guys, so that it's easy to find. Day 16 caregiver resources. Let's start with, I'm just going to put the links and you guys can go from there. And then I will put you a note, key terms to research are long-term care insurance, advanced directives, power of attorney, POD, so power of death. And anything related to elderly caregiving preparation. All right. I also recommend the book Financial Adulting by Ashley Feinstein. Ashley, oh, did I spell her name? F-E-I-N Yeah, Feinstein. Gersley. Okay, so I'm making this post for you guys right now. That way it's in the group. You can search day 16 and find it. But the biggest thing that I want to really, wait, let me make sure that this post. Okay, there. Cool. All right. So the biggest thing that I want you to know about this book right here, Financial Adulting, is, and I think I had talked to Shelly about this book before, but there is literally step by step on creating like what order to go in, understanding your taxes. It goes through, hold on, just so you guys can get a good idea. I'm just going to read down the list really quick. So this goes through what is financial adulting. You'll learn about equity and personal finance, your money goals, all about income, your money outflows, consumer activism, work optional, aka retirement, become an investor for good, buying a home, insurance, tax basics, and estate planning, which is on page 205, is probably one of the most valuable chapters you will go through, because on 205, starting 205, you're going to learn all about, hold on. Where'd it go? I can't find the page, but in here, she talks all about power of attorneys, how to set up an estate, all the things. So this is actually a really good book. I think it costs like $25, but you can find a used copy, go to like Thrift Books or something, and you can go on there. So let's go through some of these resources. So this is AARP.org, the first one. And this is one that I'm really fond of because I'm a little biased. I work for the company who owns AARP. It's our biggest book of business. And so AARP has so many different benefits for people. But specifically on here, you will find a lot of information about AARP family caregiving. This is tips, support for family or caregivers. I would highly encourage you guys, if you have someone that you're really considering, they will do like free, you can call this free consultation hotline, and they will actually ask you questions and get a feel for where you are as the caregiver and what kind of resources you're needing help with. And they'll just kind of help you manage your journey. They'll give you some real life tips to help you. Here's a Q&A tool that you can go through that just really highlights different things about caregiving, the legal and financial side. What is a power of attorney? So if you're on here and you heard that and you're like, Francis, what the heck is that? Go here and read about what is a power of attorney. Crucial documents. And you can get durable power of attorneys. This one is extremely important because a durable power of attorney is going to be to help with your financial affairs, but it even keeps authority if you become physically or mentally incapacitated. So this is going to mean that your family does not have to ask the court to intervene. And this is why it's important to have these conversations early. So there's so many different resources right here. We won't go through all of them. But just know there's a lot here for you. Long-term care calculator. So if you're trying to consider what is the typical cost of something like this, you can get discounts on those Lifeline medical alert services. So many different things, different caregiver guides. So that's one really good resource that I highly recommend. Another one is understanding how long-term care insurance works. So there's a whole different field of things for veterans, which thank you for your service, right? But there's hyperlinks for everything about veterans if you guys need to get some additional help with that. They talk about what hybrid policies are, where you can combine different coverage. That can be really important, and it could really help you if you're in a situation where you need something like that. So many things, tax tips, long-term care during COVID, all the things. Then you have New York Life. I'm not an agent. I am not recommending that you go through New York Life. I'm just showing you a resource. So you can come learn about long-term care insurance from New York Life. You can select the state And every state's going to offer something different. So let's just say I picked Indiana, okay? So when I pick Indiana, did it load? Okay, yeah. So we're on the page for Indiana. There is traditional lawn care, long-term care insurance, or a combination of long-term care and life insurance. So if you have that elderly relative or family member in your life who doesn't have life insurance, maybe getting a hybrid combined policy is a good idea. Do you guys see where I'm going with this? Like, starting that conversation will get you discovering things about what it looks like to really have to take on this responsibility. Because the truth is, okay, we can't say, oh, I love my parent, but we never even have the conversation of, mom, I know you probably don't want to talk about this, but if you die, what would you want? Like, do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Do you have a life insurance policy right now? And I'm going to talk to us that do have a good relationship with our living parent. You need to have these conversations. And if they don't have life insurance, I almost feel like, just me personally, I feel like it's my duty to make sure my mom has at least minimal coverage to cover the way she wants to go, whether it's buried, cremated, however. But these are conversations that we're so afraid to have, but we're quick to have a conversation about the next vacation we want to take. And it's like, hold up. Those are great. But if something were to happen on that vacation, Lord forbid, tragedies happen every single day. We're going to be talking about how to have to find money for a funeral because we never wanted to address the elephant in the room. And we all know we're going to die. That's the thing. And so some people may not be as direct as I am, but when you see people that pass away and they're making GoFundMe accounts, that means we need to have this conversation more. Can we agree that we'll make it our duty to help at least try to educate the people in our life so that they can be making some of these wise decisions? They're spending money on going out to eat. That money that they spend every month going out to eat could pay for enough life insurance for them to not need a dime from anyone. And not only that, you as the caregiver with some kind of long-term insurance, that takes financial burden off of you. And so you have to be really mindful in these conversations. So just come here, learn some more about these and what's being offered in the states that you guys are in. And really look at what it looks like to get protected. Connect with a financial professional. Get that free consultation just to get your foot in the door to hear what this conversation even sounds like. Write down the terms that you don't understand. And I'm giving you guys a free gem because some of us have so much pride, we don't even know how to be good students. Some of us just need to book the free consultation. Admit that we don't know. Let them say words that you're not familiar with and write them down. And then say, you know what? Could you clarify some things for me? If they can't, guess what? Now you have a list of things to go off of for you to go learn something that could serve your family and generations to come. Because guess what? If you don't know how to handle elderly care, what does that tell you about how your kids are going to handle your elderly care? They won't know how. You didn't teach them. And so sometimes we say things like, it might not apply to me. So maybe you're listening to this conversation and maybe you don't have the relationship with your mom that I have with my mom or with your dad or however. I don't have that relationship with my dad at all. And so consider your situation. Maybe there's no parent or elderly relative that you would inherit that responsibility for, right? Maybe they're already gone. May they rest. But now I want your wheels turning in a different way. How do we set up? These are the generational wealth conversations. How do we set this up in a way that when it's our time for elderly care, our children know what to do? The only way they'll know is if we teach. And so I'm talking to my parents because sometimes this may not apply to us as us being the caregivers necessarily. But what about when we age, when we hit 70 and 75, have we had these conversations with our children? And just establishing, we know that we all have an end time. And we're not saying mom is going anywhere anytime soon. But if mom, something were to happen to mom, let's talk about what that looks like. And of course, you're not going to talk to your 5-year-old about this, but just to plant a seed when they're getting older. And so you can go there on New York Life's website. Another really good resource, and we'll start to wrap up after this, is the Medline Plus resource, which can help you with a lot of the things for advanced directives, all right? So maybe you're like, I don't even know what that is. Good. That's why you're going to come here. You're going to learn. And there's also resources here in Spanish if you guys have Spanish-speaking family members. But there are advanced care plannings for serious illnesses. So if you guys have people in your life that are dealing with a serious illness, medical issues to consider, making medical decisions for a loved one at the end of their life. So you can go right here, specifics, advanced directives, right? This is where I'm showing you, like, learn how to fish, learn how to become resourceful. And you're going to learn right here, literally, what are advanced directives? Basically, to keep it super simple, they're legal papers that are going to tell the people that you love and the doctors what kind of medical stuff you want that you won't be able to voice for yourself. And as people are getting older, these are conversations that you need to have with them, because if someone wants a do not resuscitate, a D&D, and somebody violates that, there could be serious legal action taken because of that. They stated they didn't want that. They don't want to be resuscitated. They don't want to be innovated, none of that. And so let's talk about what kind of types of advanced directives. There's so many: living wills, durable power of attorneys for your healthcare. So go through this and actually start to learn some of these things. I'm not telling you have to learn all of this overnight, but I am saying start to get your foot in the door and explore this, especially us as parents. Over time, we're going to age. And so this is another resource that I would highly recommend you guys just save it to your favorites. You never know. Or what if someone on your timeline you see on Facebook or something that they're going through something with an elderly relative and maybe they're sick, right? Maybe they're asking for advice and they don't know where to start. What if you could say, hey, I don't know if this will help, but this is a resource that I learned about, and maybe check it out and this could give you some direction. Or, hey, did you know that, you know, I saw your post and I'm so sorry to hear that. I know you have a sick family member. I don't know if you know this, but if they're over a certain age, the AARP hotline will actually help them for free to figure out like what the next steps are. And then they go from there. Like, you never know how you could be a catalyst in somebody's life, right? The conduit, the connector, the plug, if you will. And so I hope that that was helpful. I know today, even though it was a short day, there was a lot of information to cover because it's a really serious thing. And I want to talk to us briefly before we establish the assignment. And it's to tell you, if you don't have a will, you need to start going to work. Okay, especially us that have kids. If you've never considered a will, you need to start considering it so that then you can take action. You better make sure you have life insurance. And I'm saying that from the most loving place in my heart that I have, is you better have some life insurance. I don't care. Hold on, y'all. I don't want the laptop to die. I don't care what you do for work. There are plenty of companies that you can get a policy through where you can literally, and the younger, the better. The younger you are, the better. Don't wait till you're 57 to start trying to get life insurance. I mean, you still can at that point, but it's going to be more expensive, number one. Two, it goes off of your health condition. So as you get older, you start having some complications, but you better have some life insurance, at least enough for them to give you what you want when you go. And those are two things that I feel like, man, I don't even feel like they're negotiable these days. You better have some life insurance and you better be thinking about a will. And it doesn't cost a lot to get an attorney to help you with that. So let's talk about the daily assignment. It has two parts. Part one is investigate when. Exactly. Do not make me no GoFundMe page because I'm going to haunt you. Okay. I'm coming back and I'm going to pull you by your legs every other night. I don't know if that's a real thing, but I was joking. The first part is investigate when and whether long-term care insurance is right for you. Look for unbiased information. By unbiased, I mean the information that isn't provided by an agent, business, or organization that will benefit from your choice. In other words, your research shouldn't be limited to a conversation with an insurance agent. Look for articles or reports from Consumer Reports, consumer groups, or news stories that list the pros and cons of buying long-term care insurance. Once you've done some background research, you can seek the help of an insurance agent. And that's really important because a lot of insurance agents want to help you for the commission. And I'm technically not licensed in certain sectors, but I'm willing to share the knowledge that I do know if you guys have a very specific question. The next piece is, if you have elderly parents and haven't had a talk about their care, set aside some time to have the conversation. You don't have to do it today, but make a date to at least start the talk. Like, just start the talk. Your parents may be reluctant to discuss their retirement preparation, including whether they have enough money should they need care. But if you're likely going to be the one taking care of them, keep pushing the issue. So two parts to your homework. So